T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
All right, I'm here. My name's Gary Parish. I'm talking to you from 54th and Broadway, Midtown Manhattan, New York City. Brad Carson is in studio back in Memphis producing a program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you get through the day. No obstacles, no disruptions. And I hope you're not tired of the Zion Williamson debate, because it's still raging strong as ever. On one side, you got the shut it down crowd. On the other side, you got the sensible people. I'm going to side. I try to always side with the sensible people. We're going to talk about it a little bit more here in this opening segment. But first, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 420 Dan Walken is a national columnist, USA Today. He had a nice column, usatoday.com, on the Zion Williamson situation. I will talk to him about it. We're going to do that in the next segment. When I finish that, I'll do 4 notable stories at 444, at which point we're going to discuss 4 previously undiscussed stories, among them the Grizzlies. Going to play for the first time tonight since the All-Star break. It's inside FedEx Forum. Chandler Parsons going to get minutes. It's the start of a stretch that has 3 games in 4 days. It's going to conclude Monday night with our king and savior, LeBron James, visiting FedEx Forum. I'm going to talk Grizzlies around 4:44. DeMar DeRozan going to play in Toronto tonight for the first time since Toronto traded him to San Antonio. His ovations, I would assume, will be warm. We'll get into that a little later on this hour. The Tigers are playing at Wichita State tomorrow night. Tip is scheduled for 7. You can watch that on ESPN2. It's an opportunity for Memphis to get its first road win over a top 150 opponent. We'll get into that just before 5 o'clock. And Gonzaga won its 7th straight WCC title last night. And Gonzaga is dealing with exactly what Memphis used to deal with when it was a monster in CUSA under John Calipari. People questioning them for no other reason then conference affiliation. We'll get into that a little bit during 4 notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always. 5:30, I will tell you which film should win Best Picture at the Oscars this Sunday. Then I'm going to eventually do dinner to go and get straight out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with Zion Williamson, because Zion Williamson continues to be the biggest story in sports. In case you missed it, he was officially diagnosed last night with a knee sprain. That's all it is, a knee sprain. He's day-to-day. He's not going to play tomorrow night at Syracuse, but he will play soon. Either way, Duke, once again, going to be shorthanded against the Orange, just like they were last month when they played Syracuse without Cam Reddish and without Trey Jones. They should still win, I think. We'll see. Either way, I promise you, pregame, halftime, postgame, there will be conversations about Zion Williamson, or at least the absence of Zion Williamson. It's going to continue to be a big story. And if you didn't know in advance of, you know, what happened on Wednesday night, you know now. He's not just a college basketball story. He's a sports story, a big sports story, including an NBA story, because of the shut it down crowd that wants him to stop playing because they think he's risking his spot atop NBA draft boards by playing basketball for something less than an actual paycheck. I talked about this somewhat yesterday, both on radio and then on television on CBS Sports Network. Charles Barkley addressed it last night on TNT. Here's what he said.
I hate the people, and I don't like using the word, I hate the people who are trying to talk about Nike. Yes, I'm on Nike's payroll. We don't have no problem with our shoes. We have had the best shoes ever. This was a fluke thing, or our shoes would do that all the time. You know, the rumor now is he's been playing the same pair of basketball shoes all year. You don't do that. I used to switch up every week. I know Shaq, we talked about it. Yeah. I know Michael Jordan. They played in new shoes every game. I would play a week, and that was it. But I trust Nike shoes. That being said, when did we ever get to the point where all people care about is money? Shaq played college for 2 years.
Three.
Kenny played for four. I played for three. Michael Jordan played for three. Tim Duncan played for four. David Robinson played for four. Some of the greatest players ever. Wilt Chamberlain, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson played. When we get to the point where you got clowns on television saying, oh, don't play. That's what you do, Ernie. That's what we do. We play basketball. I mean, I don't ever want to see anybody get hurt. This kid looked like he's going to be a fantastic player. But I get so mad when people like act like money's the only thing that matters in the world. Like, oh, dude, you're going to go in the NBA. Don't play. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Charles has a unique ability to speak plainly, but put things in a way that are easy for people to understand. He's really, really great in that role. It's why he's been as successful as he's been in his post-playing career. Because he made 2 points there perfectly. Plainly, but perfectly. The first one about Nike and the shoe explosion from Wednesday night. Nike has been taking a beating over that. They've had to release a statement. Other shoe companies have mocked them. It really was a fluke thing. And the way you proved that it was a fluke thing is exactly rooted in exactly what Charles said. If it wasn't a fluke thing, you'd see it. You'd see it more often. We watch basketball games every night for a big chunk of the calendar year. And you don't see shoes explode. You don't see them rip apart. That in and of itself is evidence that Nike doesn't have a problem. That was a fluky thing. And one of the points I made yesterday is that, you know, Nike released a statement saying they were going to investigate, try to figure out what happened with this shoe. And I'm like sitting there raising my hand like, I know what happened to that shoe. That shoe was on the foot of a 290-pound man who moves like no other 290-pound man in the world. Your shoes aren't built to deal with that. You got a 290-pound man moving in a way literally no other 290-pound man in the world moves. That's not hyperbole, by the way. I'm not talking about nobody else at that weight moves like Zion Williamson in college basketball or in the sport of basketball. Nobody else that weight moves the way Zion Williamson moves in the entire world. Your shoe's not built for that. When Zion Williamson at 290 pounds is moving the way he moves and then tries to stop on a dime, boom, that's what happened to the shoe. We don't need to investigate. Just apply common sense. You have an unusually large human who moves in ways that people his size simply do not move, moving quickly and then stopping. Boom, shoe explodes. Charles makes that point. Nike didn't have a shoe problem. It was a fluky thing. If you don't think that's true, tell me the last time you saw a Nike shoe rip apart the way that shoe ripped apart. You watch basketball games every night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. You don't see shoes explode. That is evidence that it was a fluke thing. And the other point he made is exactly the point I made yesterday, first on radio and then on CBS Sports Network when I was hosting Time to Shine with Evan Washburn. It's about the shut it down crowd. The people who are insisting Zion Williamson needs to stop playing twice a week for something less than a paycheck because he is risking his place atop NBA draft boards. As I've said a million times, a million different ways, if you want to have a conversation about amateurism, about basketball prospects not being able to enter the NBA draft out of high school, and how both of those things are shameful, given that there are basketball players that are undeniably equipped to enter the NBA out of high school? Again, you can't argue otherwise. Not when LeBron James exists, who came straight out of high school. Not when Kobe Bryant exists, who came straight out of high school. Not when Kevin Garnett exists, straight out of high school. Dwight Howard exists, straight out of high school. In that extended period of time where high school players started going to the NBA and until they were stopped, starts with Kevin Garnett and it stops the year of Kevin Durant and Greg Oden. In that time frame, because I've done a study on it before, if you would have simply, every time it was your turn to select a player in an NBA draft, if you would have simply handed a card to David Stern that said, we will take best high school player available, whoever it is, you would have had the best roster in the NBA, not even close. I did it one time where in that time frame, if the Grizzlies would, where the Grizzlies were picking, if they would have just simply said, we're not even going to think about this, we're simply going to go to rivals.com and we're going to pull up the top 10 high school players in America, and whichever one is available to us, the highest ranked one, we're going to take that guy. They would have had the best roster in the NBA, not even close. So you cannot argue that high school players aren't equipped to go to the NBA. You can't argue that they wouldn't be selected. It might take them a minute to get where you want them to be. LeBron James at 18 was not what LeBron James was at 23. But either way, the best of the best are equipped to go, and they're talented enough to develop into superstars. So if you want to have these conversations about high school players should be allowed to enter the draft, I'm with you. I agree. I've been banging that drum forever. And if you want to have conversations about amateurism and the idea that somebody like Zion Williamson shouldn't be prohibited by NCAA rule from getting fair market value for his talents, particularly when everybody around him is making money. Mike Krzyzewski is a bazillionaire because of people like Zion Williamson. Duke is making money hand over fist as a university because of people like Zion Williamson. Yes, television networks, like my employer, CBS, makes tons of money because of players like Zion Williamson. I don't exclude CBS, ESPN, Fox from this conversation. Everybody around Zion Williamson and people like Zion Williamson are making money off of Zion Williamson. The idea that Zion Williamson should be happy with a scholarship and cost of attendance stipend is insane. Anybody arguing otherwise is insane. If you want to have that conversation, I'm on board with you. But if you take that and set it over here and just focused on the system in place as it relates to Zion Williamson, your shut it down argument makes no sense. If you want to say the best prospects in America should not go to college at all because I think they're being taken advantage of and they could just sit out and probably be picked right around where they were going to be picked anyway, I'll listen to you. But the idea that Zion Williamson, even in this messed up structure, hasn't benefited from his time at Duke is wrong. He's benefited immensely from his time at Duke. People forget this, or just don't know it. Coming into this season, Zion Williamson was not the number one pick in the NBA draft, according to everybody. He was not supposed to be the best player in college basketball. You ready for this? He wasn't supposed to be the best player on his own team. You ready for this? Some recruiting services didn't think he'd be the first or second best player on his own team. You go look at the mock drafts before this season started. Most of them had R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish, two of his teammates, ahead of him. Not to mention Nasir Little at North Carolina and several other players. There was no guarantee before this season started Zion Williamson was even a top 10 pick. Nobody thought he was going to be player of the year. Literally nobody. So the fact that in a span of 4 months or so, he's gone from that, which is a well-known, super famous dunker on YouTube to the best basketball prospect in the world, is directly tied to the time he spent playing at Duke. You cannot argue that he hasn't benefited from it. You can argue that he should be able to accept fair market value, just like every other student athlete in the world, but you cannot argue he hasn't benefited from his time at Duke. So, then the next question becomes, okay, fine. But that doesn't mean he's not risking something now. This is what the shut it down crowd says. If they'll even acknowledge the points I just made, they will get back to a central point of, okay, he's helped himself, but he's helped himself so much that at this moment he can't help himself anymore. He's at the top. So shut it down. Why are you continuing to play and risk what you're risking? And there's two answers to that question. And Charles made one of them. I'll make that other one. The one Charles made is that to suggest somebody like Zion Williamson should shut it down just as the second that he has reached a certain point as it relates to his NBA draft stock is to suggest that nothing else matters. That's the only thing that has value. Hey, you were so great to start a season on a big stage. Now you're the number one prospect in America. Stop playing. Anybody who would do that would have to care nothing about the things he's actually doing. And Zion Williamson has already made it clear. He cares immensely about the things he's doing. He attaches real value to the things that he's doing. Those things being playing basketball on a massive stage on national television twice a week with his best friends trying to win a national championship and be National Player of the Year. That stuff might not matter to you. You might not think it would matter to you if you were Zion Williamson, but it matters to Zion Williamson. He attaches real value to that. I don't know where his career goes after this, but it is possible, if not probable, because most NBA players don't win championships. It's possible if he wins a championship at Duke this season, it'll be the only championship he ever wins. That's not worth nothing. It's the point Charles made. When did just securing a spot in the draft become the only thing that matters? I don't think you have to play for something less than a paycheck because you're a player, like Charles said, and players play. You certainly wouldn't do that once you get to the NBA. You want a direct deposit every 2 weeks or else. But the idea that there's no value attached to playing college basketball once you secure a certain spot in the NBA draft is nonsense. Charles made that point last night. The other point is that the shut it down crowd keeps acting like he's risking something. Ooh, you can't risk it. Ooh, he's risking too much. Playing basketball for a scholarship and cost of attendance stipend. Risking everything he's got. What's he risking? What is he risking? Here's the truth. There is not a single normal basketball injury he could suffer at Duke that would cost him anything. He'd still get the $75 to $100 million contract he's going to get from Adidas or Nike or Under Armour or somebody. And he'd still be the number one pick in the NBA draft. That's the part that just gets lost. Everybody's like, ooh, it was scary the other night. Man, what if that would have been a torn ACL? He would not play at Duke anymore. After the swelling went down, he'd have surgery. Then he'd start rehab. And then he'd be the number one pick in the NBA draft, just like he is. Going to be if he's healthy. He's really not risking anything. I mean, I guess he could go up for a dunk and somebody could hit him and he could land on his neck and break his back and be paralyzed from the eyeballs down. But, like, that doesn't happen in basketball. That's why people trying to insert football into this conversation are misguided. Basketball is not football. Zion Williamson is not really risking that much at all. I won't put it at zero because I guess there's always a chance he could have this career-altering injury, but in reality, he's not risking anything. If Wednesday night would have been worst-case scenario and Zion Williamson tore his ACL, it would have been a sad story. because it would have robbed him of the rest of his college career. It would have robbed him of a chance to win a championship. It would have robbed him of National Player of the Year awards. But it would not have cost him the things that the Shut It Down crowd thinks that it would have cost him. It would not have cost him the 2-year guaranteed contract he's going to get from being the number one pick in the NBA draft, because he's going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft regardless. After Saturday's game, if he is to come back for Duke's next game, he will at max play 13 more games for Duke. That's all he can play. Rest of the regular season, a maximum of 3 in the ACC tournament, a maximum of 6 in the NCAA tournament. That's it. That's all that's left. And there's no injury that he could realistically suffer in any of those games that would cost him any of the things the Shut It Down crowd tries to argue it would cost him. And so I've made these points, radio, television, podcast, anywhere else I speak, and yet the Shut It Down crowd is still out there. It's why Charles decided to address it last night. And among the people in the Shut It Down crowd is Trae Young, who, of course, was a high-level basketball player last season at Oklahoma, so impressive as a shot maker and a passer that he went on to be the 5th pick in the NBA draft. He's now playing for the Atlanta Hawks. So Trae Young, on Wednesday night, tweeted after Zion went down that Zion Williamson needs to chill the rest of the season. In other words, shut it down. The point he was making is the same one everybody else in the Shut It Down crowd has tried to make, that it's not worth playing college basketball anymore to risk whatever it is they think he's risking. And so I tweeted the following yesterday afternoon. You might have seen it. If not, here's what it said. If Trae Young thinks Zion Williamson should shut it down, I wonder why Trae Young didn't also think Trae Young should shut it down when he, like Zion, got off to a great start, established himself as the Player of the Year favorite, and solidified his status as a top 5 pick. Because I don't have any idea, unless your reasoning is that I know more today than I knew then, and that's not Trae Young's reasoning, unless that's your reasoning, then I don't understand how you can be a guy who was in a similar, not the same, but a similar situation a year ago to the one Zion Williamson is in right now, and say, yeah, I never considered doing that, shutting it down last season, but I think Zion should. So that was the point of the tweet. Why are you telling Zion to shut it down when you were in a similar situation last year and didn't even consider, far as I know, shutting it down? And I didn't tweet that at Trae Young, and I didn't tag Trae Young in it, but it still got to Trae Young one way or another. Twitter is funny that way, and he actually responded to it. He said he was a player who was on no draft boards coming out of high school, who was laughed at for choosing to stay home instead of going to one of the Blue Bloods. He was someone who needed to prove a point in college, needed to prove he could play in the NBA, and so he couldn't just shut it down. It's different. And I guess I would counter that by saying this. It is different, slightly, but not much. Because, and I'm not sure why Trae Young doesn't recognize this, but he didn't. Where he was on a draft board coming out of high school has literally nothing to do with the point that I made. It'd be one thing if Trae Young, before the season started, said Zion Williamson is probably a top 10 pick, so he should just shut it down. Don't want to risk that. But he addressed this on February 20th. So where he was before the season started or coming out of high school has nothing to do with the point I'm making here. Because you know where Trae Young was on February 20th, 2018? Everybody's mock drafts. Everybody's draft board. A consensus top 5 pick. As high as 3 on some mock drafts, and he's a guy who went on to be the 5th pick in the draft, and I don't know how closely you followed his college career, but he didn't get much better after February 20th, 2018. He struggled, his team struggled, they got bounced early in the NCAA tournament. By February 20th, 2018, this is my point. Trae Young had solidified himself as a top 5 NBA prospect. He was going to be a top 5 pick. It was done. And yet he never considered shutting it down. But now he's telling Zion he should shut it down? Well, why didn't you do it a year earlier? Because I know the perception of Zion Williamson is vastly different than the perception of Trae Young. One is considered a franchise-changing forward, and the other is a small guard shot maker who has some question marks. Like, I get the perception of them is different. But when you were telling Zion to shut it down, you're telling him to shut it down because you don't want to risk the draft spot. Which by extension means shut it down because you don't want to risk the money attached to the draft spot. Well, sometimes I think people think NBA rookies are guaranteed the type of money a first-round quarterback might get in the NFL. It's not the same. Zion Williamson is going to be the number one pick in this NBA draft. You know what he's going to get guaranteed? 2 years, $14 million. That's it. Now, there is a team option, and it'll be more than that. It's not like he's going to get released and be out of the NBA after 2 years. But all that he is guaranteed is 2 years and $14 million. You know what the fifth pick gets? 2 years, $9 million. So if you are on February 20th, 2018, guaranteed to be a top five pick, you're risking 2 years, $9 million guaranteed. That's all you're risking, but that is what you're risking. So how different is that really than the situation Zion Williamson is in right now? I mean, the answer is $5 million. But you'll never convince me a guy should not risk his spot that's worth 2 years, $14 million. That's crazy. But it's, you can risk the 2 years, $9 million, no big deal. Don't even think about it. There's not that much difference between those two spots when it comes to what you're actually risking by playing college basketball. And where you were coming out of high school has nothing to do with the conversation when the conversation is taking place on February 20th. That's the part Trae Young doesn't seem to understand. It's the part other people in the shut it down crowd don't seem to understand. Bottom line, it doesn't make much sense for Zion Williamson to shut it down because he's not really risking much. He's in an incredible position where even if he were to suffer an injury, and let's all hope he doesn't, if only because the columns will be insufferable, but even if he were to suffer an injury, he'd be the number one pick in the NBA draft. Zion Williamson is like a person sitting at a blackjack table with a $100 chip in front of him, and the blackjack dealer says, hey, if you win this hand, I'm going to pay you, but if you lose the hand, you can just keep your money. I'm not going to take it from you. Suddenly, that blackjack player is not risking anything. It can only get better by playing that hand to blackjack. Similarly, Zion Williamson, things can only get better for him by continuing to play at Duke. Barring something catastrophic, of course, that's so unimaginable it's not even worth talking about, Zion Williamson, even if he gets hurt, is still going to be what he's going to be if he's healthy, which is the number one pick in the 2019 NBA draft. And when your future basically includes the same thing, healthy or hurt, then you're not actually risking much, if anything, by playing. I'm not sure why the shut it down crowd doesn't seem to get that. I'll talk to Dan Wolkin about it next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show. Live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Grizzlies are back in action tonight. They're playing the Clippers inside FedEx Forum. It's the start of a 4-day stretch where they're going to have 3 games. It's going to conclude Monday night with our King and Savior LeBron James visiting FedEx Forum. We'll talk Grizzlies in the next segment. Jeff Calkins will join me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now he's a national columnist, USA Today. You can read him, usatoday.com. His name's Dan Walken, making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview.
presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
So basically everybody has written about Zion Williamson at some point over the past few days. You are among those people, and it's a really nice column. I've told people to go read it, usatoday.com. And one of the points you make in you know, to counter the shut-it-down crowd is a point that I've also made, and yet some people still can't grasp it for some reason, and that's that Zion Williamson isn't really risking that much by playing. Even if Wednesday night would have been a disaster and that mild knee sprain would have actually been a torn ACL, it would have stopped him from being National Player of the Year, probably stopped Duke from winning a national championship. He would have let the swelling go down, then had surgery, then rehabbed, and then been the number one pick in the NBA draft, same way he would be if he's healthy. So once you establish accurately that Zion Williamson isn't really risking anything, what are we even talking about with these conversations?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me ask you this. Why are you picking fights with my dude, Trae Young?
I didn't want to pick a fight with Trae Young. I can't believe I got into a fight with Trae Young. And it's actually disappointing because Trae Young is the person I wanted the Grizzlies to select with the fourth pick in the NBA draft. So I've been rooting like crazy for him to be great because it makes that opinion like possibly right long term. And now I have to root against him for the rest of his career because I hate him.
Well, and he's been great, so you're just going to end up totally on the wrong side of this in every way possible.
The point I was trying to make that Trey, for whatever reason, didn't pick up on is that, you know, because he countered my tweet with, you know, I wasn't on anybody's draft board coming out of high school. Okay,
right.
But you were by February. You were a top five pick by February. If you think Zion should shut it down because he's already established his draft status, why didn't you consider shutting it down in February? Same part of the calendar. Because the only difference in what they're actually risking, which is money, guaranteed money, the only difference between Zion Williamson and Trae Young, Trae Young is like four draft spots and like $5 million. Trae Young, yeah. This time, 2018, was guaranteed, if you will concede that he was going to be a top five pick, was guaranteed like 2 years, $9 million. That's it. But that is it. And Zion Williamson, if he's the number one pick, is guaranteed 2 years, $14 million. Why he thinks it's crazy to risk the 2 years, 14, but not similarly crazy to risk the 2 years, nine, doesn't make sense to me.
Well, here's the thing, is if you go back through the history of the NBA draft, there are a lot of examples of guys who have been injured in one way or another and not lost very much in the draft. Go all the way back to Kenyon Martin snapping his leg in the Conference USA tournament when he was a senior at Cincinnati. He was still the number one pick in the draft. Look at somebody even like Michael Porter, who, yes, he did drop, but this is somebody who didn't have just a basketball injury. Like, he has a chronic back problem that required surgery that is a major red flag long term in a way that a torn ACL or even an Achilles injury is not a red flag in the sport of basketball. And he still went 14th. So, he lost money by not going in the top five or the top 10 like he was projected to do. But he wasn't like, it's not like the NFL where, you know, Jalen Smith tears up his knee in a bowl game and ends up slipping, you know, several rounds. It's just, in basketball, you typically just take the best player regardless of the injury the person is dealing with at the time. And so there is absolutely no injury Zion could have between now and the NBA draft that would, I think, scare a team off from picking him number one. I just don't think that exists. So, yeah, I don't think he's risking anything at all.
Talking to Dan Wolkin from USA Today. And the other side of it is, you know, I hate the system. If you want to blow it up, show me the button and I'll push it for you. I'm against amateurism. I'm against high school players not being allowed to enter the NBA draft out of high school. But even with the system as messed up as it is, it's also undeniable, and you make this point as well, like Zion Williamson ain't the person to hold up against the system because Zion Williamson has benefited from the system in place, even if it's screwed up. He's benefited from the system in place literally more than anybody else in college athletics in this calendar year. Because
maybe ever.
Maybe ever. Maybe ever. Because what people forget or either do not know is that coming into this season, he was nobody had him as the number one pick in the draft. Nobody had him as the college player of the year. Nobody had him as even the best player on his own team. And yet, by playing college basketball, he's now considered all of those things, and it's going to make him tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars.
He is going to walk into the NBA with a shoe contract that I think most people in the industry project will be about $75 million.
Yeah.
Now, that is not normal for somebody walking in the NBA, even as the number one pick. Like, you may get into the NBA and get, I don't know, $10 million, $15 million, you know, and then it's that second contract, you know, if you're a Kevin Durant or somebody like that that you sign, where you really start to, you know, bank the shoe company money. So, I mean, I actually think conservatively, Zion Williams probably has made himself $30 million based on 1 year at Duke. I mean, I think that's a conservative estimate, not to mention the fact that he's moved up from, you know, maybe a top five, top six guy in the draft to the consensus number one. I mean, this has been nothing but positive for him. If you want to talk about somebody from that game the other night who is getting screwed by amateurism, how about Nasir Little, a guy from North Carolina who was a consensus top five player who's gone to college because you can't go straight into the NBA draft from high school, and he's kind of been exposed. And now I think there's some doubt about whether or not he's really a, you know, lottery pick type of talent. So there are lots of examples of guys who I would hold up as why the system should be blown up. But Zion Williamson, to me, is not that person.
You're exactly right about Nasir Little. If you want to make the argument that elite basketball prospects should not go to college and play basketball twice a week for something less than a paycheck, make that argument about Nasir Little, not Zion Williamson. Zion Williamson has benefited from being at Duke. Nasir Little, if he never plays at North Carolina or college basketball anywhere, probably a top five pick guaranteed after what he did in the Jordan Brand game and the McDonald's game. Keep in mind, with all these amazing freshmen all over this country, Zion Williamson being one of them, Nasir Little was the MVP of the Jordan Brand game and the McDonald's All-American game, projected top three pick by basically everybody before the season started. And the truth is, he's not a very good basketball player. It doesn't mean he can't be someday, but he's not right now, and he has been exposed. I don't even know if he goes in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, look, and the other thing that never gets talked about in this argument, when you say pay the players, and again, I've been more than a decade now talking about they should all be allowed to profit off their name, image, and likeness. I don't even want to have that debate because I think most smart people sort of agree on that side of it. But look, the reality for any player who is what we would categorize as a, quote, future NBA player, the point in which they are categorized that way, any basketball they play that is not the NBA, they are not earning the value equal to what they are labeled as. In other words, say Zion Williamson had not gone to Duke. Say instead he had decided to go to Europe, like Luka Doncic suggested on Twitter. And say he had signed with Real Madrid for, I don't know, $1 million to play this year before going into the NBA draft. Well, yeah, I mean, sure, making $1 million is great. I'd love to make $1 million. I think most people would love to make $1 million. But if he was playing for Real Madrid and suffered this, you know, theoretical catastrophic injury that everyone is so afraid of, and was never able to play basketball again, or was never going to be drafted in the first round because of this injury, like, you're telling me that would be he would have made it worth it to play for Real Madrid for $1 million when he would have lost 50? I mean, so intellectually, I don't think these arguments make sense. Like, yeah, I mean, it's better to make $1 million than nothing, but it's not like playing for Real Madrid or in the G League for $100,000 or any of these other things that people want to talk about as paying the players equals the value they hold once they are labeled as a future NBA player, if that makes any sense.
It does. I'm talking to Dan Walken from USA Today. He's on Twitter, at Dan Walken. And the other thing I think the so-called shut-it-down crowd misses, and I talked about this in the opening segment, is that to say once you've established yourself as a certain level prospect, it's nonsensical to continue to play basketball for something less than an actual paycheck is to suggest that actually doing what Zion Williamson is doing, which is, forget building a brand, but playing basketball with his best friends, being a celebrity on a college campus, playing for one of the greatest coaches of all time on the biggest stage that college basketball provides, and trying to win a National Player of the Year award and a national championship. It's to suggest all that stuff does not matter, doesn't have real value. And I just I reject that on a very surface level. That stuff does have real value. You talk to enough professional basketball players who are now multimillionaires. When they look back on their basketball careers, often, if they had good college experiences, they will tell you that the college experiences was the best time they ever had. And the idea that that shouldn't matter to Zion or anybody else like Zion is crazy to me.
Well, just look at yesterday with DeMarcus Cousins and the comments that he made that got a lot of attention on social media, and this clip went everywhere where he blasted the NCAA. He said college basketball is BS, and you know, went off about how Zion should sit and all this stuff. Well, then he was asked about Kentucky's, playing in Kentucky is one of the best years I've ever had in my experience in my life, playing basketball. Like, well, wait a second, you just said it's BS. So if it's BS for everyone else, but for you it was one of the best experiences of your basketball career, then how can you sit here and tell somebody else, Zion Williams specifically, that he's not allowed to have that experience because he's going to go number one, but I think he went fifth? To me, that just doesn't make any sense. And I think most players, a lot of players would say that year they had in college was one of the best they've ever had, and wouldn't trade it for anything. So is it just because you actually have millions of dollars in the bank that now you get to have an opinion that someone else shouldn't have that experience? I just don't buy that at all.
Nor should you. I'm wrapping up here with Dan Walken from USA Today. Last thing before I let you go, from an actual basketball perspective, we both agree Zion Williamson is going to be the number one pick in the draft. Do you think he's going to be the superstar so many people have labeled him to be?
You know what? It's funny. Just this morning, I got a text from somebody who, I'll just say, works in the NBA, who read my column and, you know, basically was saying, in this one person's opinion, like, Zion is going to go number one because he's probably the best prospect and there's huge pressure on whichever team gets that pick to select him, but where is he going to play? And that is a question that I do think is worth examining. Like, Zion Williamson is, I think, an amazing athlete. He's a force of nature. He has been and showed himself to be a much better basketball player all around than what any of us knew coming into college. But I also think, like, when you are the size that he is, when he gets to the NBA, I think he's probably going to have to play either the four or the five. But he is not, you know, 6'10", 6'11". Like, he's listed at 6'7", and is he really 6'7"? We'll see. Maybe he's more like 6'6". But, you know, guys who are smaller, or at least shorter, who have to play in the front court in this NBA need to be able to stretch the defense a little bit. And, you know, is his jump shot going to be consistently reliable enough where he can stretch the floor, play on the perimeter? It's going to be interesting to see. So, like, I tend to believe he's going to be awesome in the NBA, but I do think there's a scenario where, you know, he gets there, he's not going to be able to play bully ball in the league like he does in college, and he's going to have to shoot. And if he can't shoot, then maybe he's just a very good player and not a transcendent superstar.
That is Dan Walken, USA Today. You can read him, usatoday.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Dan Walken. Thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you, Gary.
And when we come back, Grizzlies back inside FedEx Forum tonight. It is the first game in a three-game stretch spanning 4 days that will conclude Monday night with LeBron James inside FedEx Forum. We'll talk Grizzlies and Tigers in the next segment.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
It feels so good, it should cost. bought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste.
Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner. It's not your traditional mattress and furniture store. Their prices are always 50% to 80% off retail stores, so they don't have to have sales. They're already murdering the competition 52 weeks a year. They got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. When readers of the Commercial Appeal were asked to vote for the best mattress store in the area, the winner, four straight years, it's Sleepy Z's. But they don't just sell mattresses, also furniture, living room sets, dining room sets, rugs, anything you need to furnish a home, you can probably find it at Sleepy Z's. And if it's not on the floor, don't freak out. Relax. Not a big deal, because they got a 42-inch kiosk there. It's filled with furniture. You can browse through that, find what you want. They'll get it for you. And remember, mention you heard about them on the Gary Parrish Show. You're going to save an additional 10% on your purchase. That's at Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner. It's located 2790 Kirby Whitten in Bartlett at the corner of Summer Avenue next door to Hollywood Feed. The number is 901-692-6200. If you want to talk to Mike, give him a call. 901-692-6200. They're on the web, sleepyzzs.com. Jeff Calkins is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, talk Grizzlies with him, Chandler Parsons with him. But right now, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
The Grizzlies are back in action for the first time since the All-Star break. They're inside FedEx Forum tonight hosting the Clippers. That'll be followed by Saturday's game at Cleveland. And then they will host the Lakers on Monday night, three games in a four-day stretch. And one of the good things about having LeBron James in the Western Conference is that he makes more trips to Memphis than he used to make as he played his the first bazillion years of his career in Cleveland and Miami. Those teams would only come to Memphis to FedEx Forum one time each year. Because he's now in the Western Conference, he comes to FedEx Forum multiple times a year. That's the good thing. The bad thing is most of his games are played after most of America goes to sleep. And I do think that that has been a ratings issue for the NBA. People talk about ratings being down. Some of that, not all of it, but some of that has to do with LeBron James no longer plays in the Eastern time zone. But either way, he'll be inside FedEx Forum on Monday night. And I am sort of interested in this three-game stretch, especially tonight, because it is the return of Chandler Parsons, who, of course, was sent to L.A., or at least opted to go to L.A., was not allowed to play with the basketball team before the trade deadline. They got that issue resolved one way or another, and now he's going to be in uniform tonight, and he's going to play tonight. So that's at least one interesting thing in a Grizzly season that has lost a lot of its interest. Chandler Parsons returned to the rotation tonight. Tip is scheduled for 7. You can listen to the game right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Story number two.
Meantime, the Toronto Raptors will be hosting the San Antonio Spurs tonight. That game's on national television, and the reason it's a big deal is because it is DeMar DeRozan's first game back in Toronto since they traded him to San Antonio for Kawhi Leonard. I imagine the ovation is going to be all positive, because what Raptors fans understand is that DeMar DeRozan never wanted to do anything but play basketball for the Toronto Raptors. I don't know if that was true coming out of college, but once he got established there, he signed a long-term deal there and expressed loyalty to the franchise. And then, because it can sometimes be a ruthless business, when Toronto had an opportunity to get Kawhi Leonard from San Antonio, boom, they moved him to Texas in the blink of an eye. And so he was upset about that at the time, and I think, you know, understandably so. But all the stories I've read about it leading up to this says that, you know, he's sort of taken that and put it over here and moved on emotionally. And so I don't know how he feels about the people who run Toronto's franchise, because they did do him in a way that I know he didn't appreciate when it happened. But he has real love for that city, real love for that fan base. And I think you'll see that on national television tonight when you turn that up.
Story number three.
Tigers back on the court tomorrow at Wichita State. They enter 16-11 overall. They are 8-6 in the AAC after beating Tulane on Wednesday night. And it's an interesting game for two reasons. A, like, is Jeremiah Martin going to keep this unbelievable streak going? He, of course, had 43 points, a career high 43 the other night in that 102-76 win over Tulane. So could he go get 40 again? Like, I'm not ruling it out. I guess I'd be surprised by it, because I'd be surprised anytime a college basketball player gets 40. You don't normally get 40 in a 40-minute game, but I'm not ruling it out. So you can watch for the Jeremiah Martin reason, or it's just an opportunity for Memphis to get its first win over maybe not quality, because Wichita State's not good this year, this a sub-100 KenPom team, but it would be the first win over even a top 250 KenPom team. Memphis is 2-6 in road games this season. The wins are over a Tulane team that's ranked 302nd at KenPom and an East Carolina team that's ranked 264th at KenPom. So it is true. Memphis has not beaten a top 250 team on the road this season. They got an opportunity to change that. Tip is scheduled for 7 o'clock.
Story number 4.
Gonzaga last night won for the 17th consecutive time and secured their 7th straight West Coast Conference regular season title. And when I write about this or rank the Zags number 1 in the CBS Sports Top 25 and 1, every morning that I tweet the link, there is pushback about Gonzaga based on little more than their conference affiliation. And I know Memphis fans can probably understand Zags fans' frustration, because when Memphis with John Calipari was in Conference USA, they dealt with the same thing. People would say all they're doing in January, February, and early March is beating up bad teams in a bad league. And it was true to some degree, but when you are beating everybody's brains in without exception, and the computers also show that you're a quality basketball team, you should be respected as a quality, high-end, top-shelf, Final Four contender, that kind of basketball team. And the numbers with Gonzaga are off the charts, just like the numbers with Memphis under John Calipari and CUSA used to be off the charts. Check this out. They've won 17 consecutive games, all of them by double digits, and by an average of 31.1 points per game. 31.1 points per game. 26-2 overall, 13-0 in the WCC. They are number one, ranked number one in the NCAA's net rankings, thanks in part to an offense that has the nation's best adjusted offensive efficiency rating, the nation's best effective field goal percentage, and the nation's best two-point field goal percentage. When you can describe a team that way, it does not matter what league they play in. They're a legitimate national championship contender, and that's why I won't be surprised if, when I'm in Minneapolis for the Final Four, Mark Few Zags are right there with me. Jeff Calkins up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.